hope you got the letter, and I pray you can make it better down here. I don't mean a big reduction in the price of beer.
So I want to throw two people under the bus before we start this next interview. First of all, this song that is being played right mm-hmm. now is as a result of Tim doing a Google search for
atheism.
No, atheist songs.
Yes.
Atheist songs?
Songs about atheism. Like, you know me, I try to pick songs that are thematic, that connect to the story. This is a song about not believing in God. And I thought it was appropriate to play.
Well done, Tim.
Rather than If I Lose My Faith in You, which we just played and we always play.
All right.
James Brown, remember? Penn and Teller.
So the other thing was, we just had a caller. I just announced. I just announced on the show that after 16 years, we'll be ending the show June 29th.
Yes.
Someone calls and says, I know Drew's finishing the show. Have there been any plans? What's next?
What? You aren't even cold in the grave yet.
Sorry. Wow. Was it a guy or a girl? It's got to be a guy. Sorry, sir. I'll still be here for 3 months.
Chris from Ottawa.
It's Chris from Ottawa. All right. Before I introduce this gentleman, I want to make sure I'm getting his name right. So can we get him on the line right away? Armin, can I just... I hate slaughtering people's names. So is it Armin Navabi?
Yes, Armin Navabi. Can you hear me well?
Yeah, I can hear you great, but I didn't say it right. Armin Navabi.
Yes, it's close enough. It doesn't really matter.
No, I don't want Armin. Close enough.
Armin.
Armin?
Yeah.
Armin, okay. Armin, thank you for joining us. You are a fascinating individual. You are a lot more interesting than me, which is why you're on the show. Thank you.
Well, thanks.
And I know that you're probably sick of telling your story, but you're relatively new to me. I can't even remember how and I feel embarrassed because you've got like 4 billion Facebook followers. And I've got 12. What?
Didn't you Google atheist?
No. No, but there's some, and all of a sudden I looked into you and I said, oh, this guy, we got to get, oh, I know what it was. It was the University in Calgary thing that you got canned. You had a speaking gig and they canned you. What happened with that?
Yeah, I mean, well, I'm a critic of Islam, so that's, I mean, among all other religions, but I criticize all religions, but it's the Islam one that gets me in trouble, so... It was really right after the New Zealand attack, and they were like, we already had the Atheist Society of Calgary had the event where they organized and everything they had to go a month in advance. But then just a day or two before the event, they were like, yeah, maybe we don't want to have an event with a critic of Islam right after the New Zealand attack. So they canceled the event.
So,
which doesn't make any sense, by the way, because... the one thing I tell them is like, imagine if an imam was speaking at the university, or a Muslim scholar or some so-called scholar or something like that was speaking at an event, and there was an Islamic terrorist attack, and they were like, yeah, maybe we shouldn't have any Islamic events, any Islamic Muslim speakers right after an Islamic terror attack. I would think that would be ridiculous, right? I mean, I would call, like, let the man speak. Like, what the hell? He didn't have anything to do with that attack. Why are you canceling his event? Right?
Yeah.
So, as ridiculous that was, this is just as ridiculous as that. Another thing I will point to is that Atheist Republic is the world's the organization that I founded, atheistrepublic.com, is the world's largest atheist group in the world right now. But even though we focus a lot on, you know, battling religion and religious ideas, we also have been calling out, the crimes committed against Muslims in China or in Yemen, and you know, those are like in Yemen, they're killing Muslims in the thousands, and in China, they're putting Muslims in concentration camps and like around a million of them, and we have been constantly, you know, calling that out and telling, you know, trying to bring more attention to that. And then this New Zealand attack happens and it gets attention as it should, and, you know, 52 people die. And people are coming to us and like, it's your fault. And we're like, can I swear on your show? I don't know if
no, actually, I'm not doing a blog in my, what's it called? A podcast in my mom's basement. We're actually on Canadian radio. And if anybody knows how legalistic and woundly
wound up.
Canadian radio, they're pretty tough on this. So you were a little frustrated with that.
Yeah. So I like you, whatever. Like.
Yep.
I can't say what
jerks.
I want to say.
You big jerks. Yep.
Where the hell were you guys when we were like? I looked at the people that are telling us that like about the New Zealand attack. Like, they were nowhere to be seen when China was putting Muslims in concentration camps. They only cared about this one because it was his white supremacist.
Exactly.
I mean, they should care about this. Everybody should care about this, right?
Yeah.
But when they were killing Muslims in South, it just shows to me that the whole thing was political. It has nothing to do with protecting Muslims.
No.
They don't care about Muslims. They just pretend like they're the guardian of the minority people. Like, oh, we are going to protect brown people. Like, bullshit.
Excuse me.
I stopped.
Allergies here. Yeah, no, I get it, man, because, listen, when the New Zealand shooting thing went down in the mosque there, somebody said to me, well, you know, that same day, so many Christians were killed in Egypt or something. It really has to do with the news cycle and who's getting sucked in by the news cycle and what sort of liberal, tree-hugging, crybaby, make-up-for-it, snowflakey, you know, awkward white person, we feel bad about everything move. Did I say that right, Tim? Was I pretty close?
Thanks for not using my name, though.
Yeah. See, Tim's a teacher here. So this is my buddy Tim across the board here.
Hello.
And he's a teacher, and he's an awkward middle-aged white man who knows all the right words to say because he's a teacher. And
doesn't just know them, believes in their use.
Yes, exactly. That's right. And so, you know, I think you get more offended at stuff than I do, right, Tim?
Yeah. You just don't know any better.
Wow. I think he just called me ignorant.
Yes.
So, Armin, here's the deal. I want to know about your actual personal story. Like, you grew up in the Muslim family, then you, I don't know, went to philosophy class in university and then said, okay, there is no God, and then you watched a lot of Penn and Teller?
No. Well, actually, my family, okay, I was born in an Islamic country. My family were actually pretty secular or liberal or whatever. They're just nominal Muslims. I became very religious, and I annoyed the hell out of them because I kept on trying to convince them to pray more. Because I was in Iran. My parents didn't really practice anything Islamic. They were just Muslim by name alone.
Yeah.
But my school, I couldn't understand it, actually. I grew in Iran. My social bubble, this is not the representative of Iran at all. It's just my own social bubble was way more liberal, right? And these are, in fact, a lot of the people in our social bubble didn't really like religion that much. But they still consider themselves Muslim or God believing, but they just didn't think about it. I just remember when I was growing up, I couldn't understand why people don't care about religion, or God. Like they all believed in God. They all believed that the Quran is the direct word of God. But the people that I knew, they never bothered to even read the thing. Mm-hmm. I just took it a lot more seriously than they did because I thought that's the most logical thing to do. If all of this is real, why are we not paying more attention to it? I mean, I remember as a kid, I was really obsessed with the idea of hell. I was really scared of it. They told us that, like, we had class, they told us, like, yeah, there's a place, most people are going to go and end up there. You're going to be burning for thousands and thousands of years. Okay, go home and have fun. Like, what the hell? Like, why is nobody else scared? Like, I mean, if I told anybody that 2 years from now there's going to be a bunch of people showing up at your door and beating the whatever out of you, you're going to be scared for the next year, and you're going to be trying to do everything you possibly can to not make sure that that doesn't happen.
Right.
But these people are telling us that there's a hell, and they're going to do all sort of shit stuff to us. Sorry. And we have to, and nobody seems to do anything about it. Nobody seems to care to make sure that we don't go there. So I was really scared about this, and I was trying to find a way out. I didn't want to go to hell. So I don't know how much time we have because I could tell you what I did.
No, you go. You do it, man. This is what I'm interested in because, look,
girl.
I want you to know this because I don't know what kind of research you did on me. Let me just tell you that we are broadcasting the show live on Canada's largest Christian radio station, number one.
Oh.
Number two, okay. I used to be a pastor. And then when I came back from Australia, stopped being a pastor, I had a good look in the mirror and said, who are you kidding? There's no way you should be in spiritual leadership because you just doubt so much stuff. And over the last 16 years of doing the show, I have gone on a crazy journey in my own faith to the point where I'm no longer certain that there's a God. I'm not an atheist. I might call myself a red-letter agnostic theist. So a red-letter... The words of Jesus in the Bible and the motel Bibles were written in red. I still think that's great teaching. Red letter, agnostic, I don't know for sure. That's because we're talking about a whole lot of invisible stuff. So that's where this faith thing is required, I guess. Red letter, agnostic theist. I look around the world and I see a stuff that I see would suggest to me the strong probability of a designer. That's it. That's kind of all I know. So you're in a safe space right now, but I'm personally very interested in your personal journey.
Okay. I'm not going to refer to all the stuff that you said because I really want to, but I'm going to finish my story, okay?
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of... I just want to point out that you know, we don't require faith. We could get away. We could live our lives pretty much without any problems.
Absolutely.
But let me continue my story. So this is what they told us in school, okay? They told us in school, and this is our version of Islamic teaching. I understand that other people have a little bit of, this part of it is a little bit different for other Muslims. But what the part that is the same is that as a Muslim, you're not going to be held accountable for things that you do as a child. You know how in Christianity, for example, you have original sin? So as soon as you're born with sin.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
In Islam, it's not like that. In Islam, like, how could a child be sinful? Like, they can't even think properly to be able to be... You can't hold them responsible for things that they can't be responsible for, right? So there's an age of reason, and until you hit that age of reason, there's no sin and there's no good deed. Like, they told us they have two angels... on your right and on your left, one of them is writing down your good deeds, and the other one is writing down your sin. But their sheets are black. They're white until you hit the age of reason, and before then, they're not going to write anything, right? But this is where it changed. So this is where it's different from...
By the way, there are many within Christendom that feel that there is an age of reason reality as well.
Right. So what they told us in school is for that this age of reason for girls is 9, and for boys it's 15.
Okay? Wow. Hold on. They have a definitive age?
Yeah, okay. And this is what some other Muslims disagree, but this is what we learned in Iraq.
Okay.
And I later on I realized that those are actually the age of marriage as well. Right?
Oh.
So that's where they got them from.
Got it.
So 9 and 15. And so to me, so I learned this, and I was like, wait a minute. So if I die before age 15, I die pure. I die without sin. So the only place you could go to if you die before age 15 is heaven. Suicide is a sin in Islam, but there is no sin before age 15. So even though suicide is a sin, it's not a sin if I do it before the age of reason.
So child suicide bombers are good to go.
I don't know, but that's not what I was thinking. I was thinking that if I just kill myself before age 15, I can guarantee that I will not go to hell. Let me tell you how scared I was of hell. I actually lit a match and I put it on my arm just to see how much it hurt. Okay.
Hold on. Say it again. Hold. I didn't hear him, Tim. What did he say?
He was saying to test hell to see what it's like, so he wouldn't go. He burned his arm.
Oh, you lit a match and burned your arm.
Yeah, just to see what it feels like. And then I tried to imagine that all over my body, and then I tried to imagine that for 5 minutes, then for 10 minutes, then for a year, and then thousands of years. I'm like, yeah, there's no way I could tolerate that. Nobody should be able to tolerate that, right?
Yeah.
And I went to my teacher actually in school, and I'm like, okay, why wouldn't I just kill myself and make sure I don't go to hell?
Yep.
And he told me that, okay, the reason why you wouldn't do that is because heaven apparently has different layers, right? There's the VIP section, and there's the not so interesting. So there's different levels. The best part of heaven is for martyrs, and that's where Muhammad is. That's the highest part, right? But he said that the reason why you wouldn't kill yourself to go to heaven is because you would just go to the lowest part of heaven. If you're in heaven just because you died as a child, you really didn't earn heaven. So you will go to the lowest part of heaven.
Right.
I thought, I don't really care. I'll take a parking lot for eternity. I just don't want to burn, okay? I'll take any part of heaven that they could give me. I'm just trying to avoid going to hell, right? And I thought this is the dumbest gamble anybody could take. I thought I found a loophole in the system. If I could get guaranteed heaven, why would I? Even if there's the smallest chance that I could burn in hell, I should try to avoid that. Nobody should take. No, this is not a gamble any reasonable person would take. I thought, like, I'm asked to play a game that nobody even asked me if I want to play this game or not, and the consequences of losing is too much.
Yeah.
I found a loophole. I found a get-out-of-jail-free card, and I'm going to take it. So I jumped out of the window of my school. I broke both my legs. I broke my left arm. I fractured my back. I was in a wheelchair and my bed for 7 months. I missed 1 year of school. And the only reason why I didn't try it again was because I saw what it did to my parents. I saw my dad cry for the first time. I didn't know he was capable of crying.
Eesh.
I saw my mom just collapse on the ground in despair. I didn't know she, like, I saw that and I felt very guilty about what I did to them. And I didn't try it again because of them. Mm-hmm. But then I hit age 15 and then I'm like, oh. Now I'm stuck. Suicide is not an option anymore because now it's a sin and it will just get me directly to hell. So now I have to play this stupid game and I have to make sure that I win. And I convinced myself, okay, this is not that hard, okay? I can do this. I just might have to make sure that I don't miss a prayer, I fast during Ramadan, and that's it. That's all it takes, all right? But then the problem is that age; those are the age that you also start realizing that you're attracted to girls.
Yeah, good luck with that.
And the problem with God is that he's not just a tyrant of your actions. He's also a tyrant of your thoughts. Because sins don't include just actions. Sins are also thoughts.
Yep.
Just thoughts are also sins. So every time you have an impure thought, it's basically you feel disgusting, you feel so ashamed of who you are and how you feel, and you feel that you apologize to God. You know that he could see in your mind, and you're trying to beg for forgiveness, and you're like, never again, and it just happens again. But here's an interesting thing. I now think about it. When I think about it now, I realize that, okay, at least when I was going through that, I was straight, and I thought, like, one day I would get married and I would be okay. But imagine if I was gay.
Yeah.
Imagine the amount of disgust that I felt back then about my feelings. If I was gay, then I would think that this is who I am. I would feel this is a prison that I would never be able to get out of.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
How ashamed of, like, this is what, you know, see, this is the problem with religion. A lot of people think, like, oh, the cost of religion. They think about suicide bombing and war. But those are just the stuff that gets captured in the news. Religion really screws our lives in a much, much more, many more ways, in a more subtle, less interesting, less newsworthy ways. That the amount of misery that causes just because it's based on, I mean, you're trying to live a life based on ancient scripture, based on people that wrote a guide to life with no understanding of how the universe works, how our minds work, how anything works. And we have evolved so much beyond that, and we're still insisting to go and look at their guide. And obviously, there's going to be a lot of costs to that. And it's not always going to be a big explosion like that is going to be in the news. If you add up all these cost of all these little, how many people are not with the person that they love? How many people are disgusted of themselves? How many children have been abandoned by their family? How many politicians have just made subtle decisions in their economy based on their faith rather than actually something logical? And, you know, that wasn't newsworthy as well. Just a little bit of a different decision that economically changed millions of people's lives. How many, you know, if you add all of those costs together, I mean, I lived in Philippines for a year, right? I was with my wife there. I went to the pharmacy. I was trying to buy a condom. And the pharmacist was telling me, oh, this is bad. This is not a good thing. The pharmacist, right? This is a very Catholic country, okay?
Yeah, yeah.
And Philippines is a country that it suffers from overpopulation. And in a country that is suffering from overpopulation and the amount of poverty that is caused by that, the attitude that anything that stops a pregnancy is bad, how many people are suffering economically because of that kind of attitude? Hmm. Right? These are the things that are not newsworthy, but is ruining people's lives.
Okay. I got to apologize because you caught me listening.
Okay, so... Again, if any atheists are listening, just go to atheistrepublic.com. But this is a lot of people say, like, oh, you're too aggressive against religion. And religion still, like, even atheists tell us that. Some atheists tell us that, hey, religion has some good thing to offer. And they think I'm extreme there when I tell them, no, it has nothing to offer. It has nothing to offer. Anything that people claim that religion has to offer has been done better without religion. Religion is holding us back. We have most of the advances that society has made is because of a minority few people that have, that have managed to think beyond ancient superstition and dogma. And we are still, like, it's amazing to me that these kind of ideas have still survived. We have so much to do. We have planets to conquer. We have diseases to eradicate. We have people to feed. And most of this planet is still looking at ancient scripture. Mm-hmm. Like, how stupid is that, that we're looking at that? We're looking at the writings of people that had nothing. We have so much more to work with right now. Why are we still so attached to that? Let it go. It's useless now.
Okay, let's see, where do I go with this? I am so intrigued with your passion. Like, I'm very intrigued with your passion. To me, passion indicates that there is more behind what the person is saying. I had a conversation the other day with someone, I mean, I said, okay, so you're an atheist. You've told me you're an atheist. I would love to know your story, because I don't know anybody who has just come out and said, yeah, I'm an atheist. I go, well, how come? And they go, I don't know. I just don't believe it. I don't know a single atheist who says that. There's always, now maybe there is, I'm just telling you, I haven't come across them. There has always been a backstory. And the backstories seem to have a common denominator. And the common denominator is, now hear me out, this, you may disagree, but this is my understanding of things. The common denominator, I mean, it goes like this. You know what? I was explained something that I had hope in, and then I realized that I was hoping, the thing I was hoping in was crap, and I no longer believe in it. So the whole thing started with the hope that there might be more to this world than just this world. And then the hope was polluted because the teachers of that hope polluted it, but the followers of that hope desecrated it. But the whole thing starts with hope, and then it goes to disappointment, and then it goes to screw it. What's your take on what I just said?
I mean, I'm not going to speak for all.
No, it's impossible to do that. Yeah.
Right. I mean, every atheist have nothing in common other than a lack of belief in God. So I can only speak for myself, okay? But I can tell you that the only reason why anybody needs to be an atheist is because there's just no evidence. I mean, it's just nothing there.
Right,
there's
but that's what faith is, right? I mean, if, like, for example, I am no longer a certaintist. I used to be an evangelical Christian, which meant I was certain there was a God. You know what that did to my faith? Nothing. Then I came out. I came out and said, I'm no longer convinced or certain that there is a God. Guess what happened to my faith? It increased. Because that's the definition of faith.
No, but I didn't. First of all, I don't believe. If I only believed in things that I was certain of, I wouldn't believe in anything, right? I'm not saying believe in things that you're certain of.
Right.
You only need to believe in things based on evidence. Only gives you a high degree of probability. It doesn't give you certainty. Right?
Okay.
That's not what I'm saying.
Right.
But if faith is believing in things without evidence, then faith is harmful. Then faith has to be. Then we have to get rid of faith. Then faith is dangerous. Okay? Faith, so you're saying, so people are like, oh, I don't need evidence, I have faith. Okay, that's a very dangerous way of thinking.
No, I get the danger in that because of how many dopey people are walking around with their head up their backside and just claiming, well, I just have faith. And you're watching them going, man, I mean, there needs to be some reason in here somewhere. I have certainly weighed and measured and have decided that despite numerous things, I am making a choice to hope that there is something greater. So my faith has now turned into hope, if that makes any sense.
Hope is different than faith, okay?
Yeah.
Hope is that wishing if something is true, but not knowing if it's true or not. Faith is claiming that you know something is true without having any reason that it's true. Hope and faith are not the same thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
But let me just tell you this thing, right? So let's say me and you are looking for treasure, right? I have a map and you have a map, okay? Let's say my map is so red, everything is in the wrong place. The trees are in the wrong place, the mountains are in the wrong place, the well is in the wrong place. It's completely off based on what the actual field, where everything actually is. Your map is more accurate. It's not exactly based on what's real, what's out there, but the mountains are close to where the mountains are supposed to be. The forest is close to where the forests are supposed to be. Mm-hmm. And now we both go look for this treasure. And the treasure could be anything, whatever we want to get out of life. Which one of us are going to be able to achieve our goal fast, you know, in a more efficient way? Probably you. Sometimes randomly, I might just stumble upon the treasure just randomly before you. But more often than not, you are going to be more successful. Our beliefs are basically our maps of reality. It's never going to be 100% reality. But the closer it is to reality, the more we are going to be able to get out of life the things that we want, right? And the only way that we could ensure that our belief system is close to reality is by using methods that give us consistent results. And using logic and using the scientific methods have given us consistent results. Using religion, using faith, have given us the most random results that you could ask for. Like you could see that faith has given us gods with elephant heads and gods that get crucified on a cross. So it's random. There's nothing consistent. Their understanding of reality doesn't give us anything useful. Like, if you can see that people that use the scientific method, now we're flying in a tube across countries while watching movies. Mm-hmm. You can see that their method is giving us something. What has religion given us? Nothing.
Well,
it has given us nothing other than misery.
Right. Well, I guess some would say, I mean, that the greatest volunteer force in the world today are those that are faith-based, come from faith-based. Some would say that the only reason we have writing or reading material is because those who came from a tradition of faith who printed the Gutenberg Press, printed books, and that's where that came from. Some would say that the medical profession really launched itself into a different sphere as a result of those who were faith-based people who, like the higher learning centers, the Harvards, the Yales, et cetera, and the medical stuff and the... Boy, did I ever say that well, eh, Tim? Did you like how I explained
good.
That? See, that was sharp.
Okay, let me respond to that. I heard that a lot, okay?
Yeah, exactly. I'm sure you would. That's what I'm saying. So what do you say to those people?
Okay. Okay. If let me just give you an example. Like, if a Muslim, there are many Muslims that support gay rights, right? Many Muslims.
Sure.
Okay? But does Islam support gay rights? No, Islam does not support gay rights. Mm-hmm. There are many Muslims that support women's rights. But does Islam support women's rights? No, Islam does not support women's rights. There are many Muslim and Christian scientists. There are many Muslim and Christians that have done many great things. Mm-hmm. But show me anything in Islam that is responsible for that. Show me anything in Christianity that is responsible for that. We are treating people that are doing good because of who they are, and we're taking the credit away from these individuals and giving it to the religion that has no responsibility. Islam, right, has nothing to do that has nothing in it that promotes any of these good values. When the Arabs achieved their golden age of science and philosophy and poetry and art, they reached it just as any empire would have when they reached that much wealth. They reached that, they did science in spite of Islam, not because of Islam. When the Christian nation had the Renaissance age and did science and philosophy and poetry and that, they did that because they were rich and they had more wealth than ever. It had nothing to do with Christianity. And in fact, eventually it led them to start walking away from Christianity.
Right.
Okay? If I show you 1,000 Muslims that enjoy Game of Thrones, does that make Game of Thrones an Islamic thing? If I show you 1,000 Christians that enjoy knitting, does that make knitting a Christian thing?
No, but it does make it a thing for homeschoolers. Did that joke fall flat? Was that flat, Tim?
A little bit, but only flat? For the uneducated.
Okay. So, but hold on. You did say something like, nothing came out of Christianity that was really influenced, you know, the good things of the world. I don't even know what you said, man. But Jesus certainly, if he was real, and if what he said was actually recorded in the scriptures that we read that is talking about what Jesus said, if that's all true, then apparently Jesus said stuff like, we should be taking care of the least of these in our society. Whoever the least of these are, that's who should be taking care of.
Be nice to them, but remember, if they're not a Christian, they're going to burn in hell forever. Jesus was the person that cursed the tree because it didn't have fruit at the wrong time of the year.
Right.
Jesus was the person that said, bring the sword. Jesus was the person that if you love your family before me, then you're not with me.
So would you...
hate your own family. No, Jesus was the person that said, like, the only way to the kingdom of heaven is through me. So if you don't love me, what's your punishment? Eternal Christianity was the ideology that popularized one of the most sadistic suggestions in human history, which is eternal torture. It was Christianity that popularized that idea.
But have you... You must have heard some people within Christendom, some Christian, I don't know whether they're theologians or authors or spokespeople or whatever, who would disagree with that and say, no, that's actually not, as we have researched and understood and pulled apart the entire contextual application of Scripture, that's actually not, we don't feel that that's true.
What's true? Eternal hell? This is why I say most Muslims are better than Islam and most Christians are better than Christianity. Because
I completely agree with you on that.
All right, sorry, that other voice is Tim, who's been... Tim, I have to introduce you. So this is Tim, and Tim's having a hard time. You okay, buddy?
Oh, yeah. No, I completely agree that you know, some of the best Christians in the world are ones who don't believe in Christ. I completely agree with that. Like, I think there is a difference between religion and faith, and I think we've touched on that already. But I guess my one sort of concern is your faith in science and evidence. And I guess my concern is...
It's not faith if you have good reason for it.
Okay, well, let me ask you this then. Why can't science...
I love how you phrase it.
Why can't science determine whether light is a wave or a particle? Because up until then, stuff had to be one or the other.
So this is a religious kind of thinking because a lot of people...
That was science that was saying things were waves or particles.
I know.
Here's
I know.
Another thing. Nobody, for example, I'm someone who struggles with my weight. And for the longest time, science, the evidence, said that you had to cut down on your fat. And now we have found out that, in fact, fat is healthier for you than was previously thought.
You need to cut carbohydrates.
Yeah. So science and evidence isn't foolproof either.
But that's very interesting, because that's actually the strength of the scientific method. That, and other people introduce it as a weakness, but that's actually the strength of it, because it updates itself. The people
that's
that
good point.
Always
no, I like that point.
No, I agree with you, right. But you keep saying that, you know, we can't move forward, and people put their faith in these scientific methods, and it keeps changing. So, in fact, what I'm saying is, yeah, there's definitely a strength to admitting you're wrong, but by the same token, if I'm putting my faith in something that's constantly changing, potentially
don't
my head's spinning, and
anything.
How does that help?
Don't put your faith in anything. In anything.
So this conversation is moot.
I'm not saying put your faith in science. Nobody should put their faith in anything. You look at it's not faith if it's based on evidence, okay? The beauty of the scientific method is never that it never pretends that it's certain about anything, okay? Religion claims certainty without any evidence. Science doesn't claim certainty, but even though they have a lot of evidence for their claims. Even the stuff that they have the most evidence for, they still say, like, this is probably the most the most realistic explanation.
Okay, hold on. I'm just looking at the time. I'm looking at the time, and I told you it was going to be like 25 minutes, and you got a busy day, but I don't want to leave until I ask you. See, I actually don't care about this part of the conversation. What I care about is you, dude. I mean, I care about you and your organization. This is so interesting to me. Your journey, what you used to believe, what you no longer believe. To me, that's the interesting stuff. Because my show has never been one to sit here and try to resolve whether there's a God or not a God, or whether this religion or that. I don't give a holy grunt about that stuff.
For that, you can buy my book, Why There Is No God.
There it is. Perfect. That's where I was going to go to. Yeah, plug in the book. But no, what I wanted to ask was, do you have any stats on how many... In your atheist organization, Atheist Republic, how many of your followers, I don't want to say followers, it makes it sound like religion.
So they are followers,
technically. How many are ex-Muslim and how many are ex-Christian?
Or ex-Jew or ex-Hindu?
Yeah, have you broken down any stats like that at all or no?
It's really hard to get a stats like that, but what I can tell you is some of the most popular countries that we get our followers from is from Islamic countries.
Really?
So there our second top country used to be United States. And I'll tell you now why it's number one. Our number one country used to be Pakistan, but Facebook banned our page in Pakistan because they don't like us there. So now number one is the United States.
Okay.
But the top countries are, Philippines, used to be Pakistan, United States, Indonesia, Egypt. Many of them are Islamic countries. So we are resonating with a lot of people with that.
Are you able to, I don't think you can answer this question. I think it's kind of a goofy question. So forgive me for the question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Have you been able to figure out if there's much of a difference between an ex-Christian atheist and an ex-Muslim atheist? In other words, do ex-Muslim atheists tend to be more dogmatic or outspoken versus...
It's not about being ex-Muslim. It's about how much they suffered from religion.
Yeah, right? That's true. That's a good point.
So a lot of people that had their lives have been influenced by religion more, when they come out of it, they're more passionate.
The more radical kind of background, right?
Oh, way to use the radical word.
Christian or otherwise, jeez.
Understandably more, but I can tell you that even in very Christian countries also, for example, Philippines, we have a lot of people that are very outspoken about there, because they also, like the Christians in Philippines are influenced by Christianity a bit more than where I am in Canada. So obviously, Islamic countries are the worst when it comes to how they treat people that leave their religion.
Interesting. Okay, all right, let me finish with this. But thanks, man. I know how crazy busy you are, and for you to spend some time with us on the show, thank you, Armin. I really appreciate it, man. And I'm not sucking up because I'm nice or because I'm Canadian. I know you're busy, so thanks.
No, thank you.
Okay.
Thanks for having me.
What does the Atheist Republic bring to people's lives? So now you've got a couple of minutes to do a little promotion for your organization. Join our organization because you get a free T-shirt or you get, no. You know what I mean? Like, what do you guys bring to people's lives?
Okay, so we, as I mentioned, we're the world's largest atheist community, and we basically do two things. The main thing is to provide a community for atheists around the world to make them feel like they're not alone. They shouldn't be ashamed. They shouldn't feel like they're demonized, that the society has abandoned them, that there's a lot of us out there. To this day, as people keep joining us and seeing how many of us are out there, I keep seeing this comment like, wow, I didn't know there's so many of us. This is basically, the whole point is to normalize atheism. Even a lot of religious people comment, even though we disagree with them, they say like, okay, you know what, we disagree, but I agree that atheists shouldn't be looked down upon like this.
Yeah.
And they support, there are some religious people that support our organization. We have consulates all around the world, and we organize meetings and events in many different countries. Sometimes it's not very welcome. The deputy minister of Malaysia, when they saw our consulate gathering in Kuala Lumpur, they publicly announced that they need to hunt down the members of our community. Wow. This is the reason why our organization was brought in the United Nations Security Council, because of the statement by the deputy minister in Malaysia. But so right now we actually just recently moved to the next phase. For the past 10 years we were trying to provide community for atheists and normalize atheism, just to make it more acceptable. But now we are tired of just providing community and support. We want to go after the people that threaten atheists around the world.
Yeah.
We think that it's not okay that whenever people attack Christians or Muslims or Jews, there's an international outcry against whoever is doing this. But when people attack atheists, when they put them in jail, when they kill them, when they slaughter them, when they even discriminate against them, there's not that much of a backlash. And there's not that many global advocacy groups protecting atheists. So we want to become political. We are now a political movement. And now this is the next phase. And if you guys, we have now official membership. This is actually just something that we started 2 days ago.
Oh.
So this is the new phase of Atheist Republic. We did a very good job at our first phase, which was providing a community for atheists, which ended up being the largest one in the world. Now we're going to go after the people that threaten atheists on a global scale.
Well, I would like to sign up. Because I'm going to be finishing my show soon here at the end of June, and I'm not going to have much to do. And I would love to find people that are hurting your people and throat punch them. I would love to do that. I mean, in the name of Jesus, I would do that, of course. Yeah.
We'll take it. Even if we disagree, we'll still take support. Here's what I say of people. We don't need to agree to get along, okay? I want to be able to passionately voice my disagreement against Christianity and Islam and yep. Judaism and yep. Hinduism and Buddhism. And I want Muslims to be able to passionately tell me why they disagree with atheism.
Yep.
And Christians, and I don't want them to hold back. I don't want Christians to hold back and why they disagree with
atheism. But dude, you know as well as I do that nobody can argue better than those of you from the Middle East. You guys are passionate arguers. I mean, you'll argue about coffee sizes. I spent a bit of time over in the Middle East, and man, you scare me.
Venti, grande, go.
Yeah. Well, listen, our show... I wanted our show to become something similar to what you guys are all about. So our show is for skeptical believers. And I want people who doubt. They're part of the faith, but they doubt. I want them to feel not alone, that you are enough, that it's okay to doubt, and that you still belong, even though you doubt. So we got some kindred spirit. We got a little kumbaya moment happening here, so...
Without using Jesus' name.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Armin, dude, thank you so much for joining us on the show. We're going to, just so you know, I want to be cool about this. The next guest on our show is Mubin Sheikh. And Mubin is he's our terrorist guy. He gives us a terrorist update once every month or so. He's an ex-Muslim extremist turned undercover intelligence operative. He's the author of a book called Undercover Jihadi. He is still a Muslim, and he's been listening to your interview here. And instead of having you guys on together, that's not the kind of show I am. I just wanted to get his take on some of the thoughts you were saying. And so I wanted you to know that, just in case, you know, later you go, whoa, he had some guy on after me who...
Oh, no, that's fine.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, I like Mubin, first of all.
No, that's great. Yeah. I might, where can I event, like, I would want to invite him on our show, on our podcast.
Oh, he is such a good guy, and he's not just an like a loudmouth arguer, you know.
He's smart.
He's smart. Yeah. He's a rare guest on the show.
I have the most fun when I talk to people that I disagree with, right? There's no much point in talking to people you agree with. You don't learn, right? Disagreements are fine. Like, you can have passion.
Yeah. Well, actually, let me just introduce the two of you, and then we'll let you go. Armin, okay. This is Mubin. I can't do this without rhyming. Mubin, Armin, Mubin.
Hi.
Armin, salam alaikum.
Whoa, you can't. Don't be saying that to a Muslim guy, you dirty... or do you mean to an atheist guy?
No, it's fine. It's Arabic. It's not necessarily Islamic.
Oh, okay. See, I'm just some awkward white guy in the middle of a...
I could do it in Hebrew. Shalom aleichem, and there you go.
there you go.
Mubin, Armin and I were just chatting about a little bit about you. I didn't want him to not know that you were coming up next. He's going to go because he's more important than you are, Mubin.
Oh, no.
But he said, you know, maybe Mubin might want to join us in the conversation, you know, as part of his group kind of thing. And I thought, man, Mubin needs to hear that. Are you down with that, Mubin?
Am I down with what?
Armin, what do you want Mubin for?
Yeah, so we have an ex-Muslim podcast called The Secular Jihadist. And I was wondering if you would be interested in coming on our show.
Yeah. No, I've been following them, you guys, I guess, online and whatnot. But even before you go, at least... I like what you said at the end there, really. I mean, as much as we will disagree, belief versus unbelief, each side should be able to make their case without fear of death and sexual torture and all the things that he mentions, which is a real, real problem in the Muslim world. And I'm coming from the believer perspective of, really, my faith is not that, yes, my faith is not that weak, that somebody who comes forward with arguments against it would warrant me to, you know, want to kill the person. And so that much, at least, we do agree on. It is a problem. And I'd be very happy to come on your show, Armin. I think we'll have a good chat.
Armin, just so you know, I want to brag about you, Mubin. Armin, this guy helped the Toronto police bust up the Toronto 18 terrorist plot. This guy is...
He knows of me. I think we initially clashed online. I know we have a mutual colleague, Faisal Mutar, who's doing his own thing. So, I've been keeping an eye on these ex-Muslims myself. Don't worry, I don't have an official list, because we all know, you know, when that happens, not a good thing.
It's not a good thing when you have a list. No, it's not. That's not. Well, looks, you know, Mubin's been a regular guest on our show, and I've enjoyed my conversations with him. And Armin, thank you so, so much, man. I really appreciate your time, dude.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
All right. Bye-bye. Bye. Well, Mubin.
Yes?
Is he gone? Can we talk? No, I'm just kidding. I really enjoyed that. You were listening for a part of it, and then all of a sudden you started texting me like crazy. So I know you disagree because he's an atheist and you're a believer, and so obviously you disagree. But can you, let me ask you this. How has that organization grown so much?
Well, you know, there's a great quote by a Sufi sheikh, Imam al-Ghazali, who says that half of all atheism in the world is because of the bad actions of believers.
Yeah, true story.
Completely.
Yeah. Okay, and the grievances that a lot of these people have from the ex-Muslim community or ex-whatever, whether it's a theological dispute, that is a part of it, but there is also a cultural dispute, right, because of heinous cultural practices that get done in the name of Islam, right? So, for example, when saying that Islam doesn't give women any rights, which is completely false, I, as a Muslim, have to admit and look at the actions of the Muslim world and think, well, why this disconnect? If I'm believing that, you know, Islam does give women these rights, then how do I explain the disconnect? And so we would say that, well, look, the Muslims are simply not following what they're supposed to be following. For example, while it is true that atheism is on the rise in Muslim lands, Islam is also on the rise in non-Muslim lands. For people refinding Christianity, because that might be, you know, the cultural link that they have to religion or whatever, and they're refining it. So this back and forth between faith and atheism, or belief and unbelief, has been around from the beginning of time, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, there's no point for a God to send a message to these prophets and tell people to believe if people are not believing, right? And in the messages that God gives and has given, particularly in the Abrahamic faith, Judaism, Christianity, and Islam, it addresses arguments of atheism, right? So this is one of the things I always find it very easy to discuss with atheists. You know, there's a joke, all right, the theist, we say, oh yeah, atheism, the belief that water originated in the well, okay? Because it is a very superficial outlook on life, suggesting that there is, you know, nothing deeper and nothing more, right? It is just bricks and mortar and that's it. And there's a fundamental flaw here, because when we talk about the evidence of science, we're talking about finite measurement, right? Now you demand of a finite measurement to be able to measure that which is infinite? That's impossible. It's like asking me to take my, you know, grade school ruler, which is like, what, 12 inches, and saying, all right, find me a tree that's 25 feet. Oh, guess what? It's, you know, the 25-foot tree is bigger than that 12-inch ruler, therefore it doesn't exist. Of course not. You know, a very simple argument, I'll leave it at this. Look at the basic we see in organisms, right? Small organisms that we're still discovering. Now, science, if I can make it very simple, is just us with the magnifying glass. It's all we're doing is we are witnessing now the miracle of God, the miracle that the Creator has put in this world. So we see creatures with DNA, all right? Now, they come, you know, factory built with a program, with an operating system. And yet we say that it is not possible there is a programmer behind that operating system, right? We see computers with operating systems. Obviously, we know they have a programmer. They have a hardware as well, a shell. So should we not apply the exact same logic to say, here is this DNA, which is this coding that comes in all these creatures, but there's no programmer? It's random? That's the, you know, that's the most fantastical, absurd theory ever, I would say. Mm-hmm. So that's the believer perspective to this, right? So many ways to have fun with it, but that's the point, right? We should be firm in our belief. We know that this creator that has brought forth all these things, and look, there are going to be differences because we're human beings, right? This is how we're created. People perceive things differently. They will understand things differently. Logic, intellect, upbringing, education. So these are all things that we take together when we say faith, right?
Yeah.
Because it could be spirituality. It could be all those things within it together.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You know what? There are two things I want to finish on. One is, I'm not a fan of just being so afraid of disagreeing that we pollute truth, that we water down truth. The intentional fakeness of the kumbaya stuff drives me nuts. But at the same time, the insane arguing drives me nuts. So there's got to be that happy ground. But I love the fact that here we've got a Muslim guy on this Christian radio station defending the reality of a God in a very similar way that a Christian would. And I want Christians to hear that there's so much similarity in the desire to believe in more. And that's where the common ground is. That's where the hope is. And that's why I'm so proud to have you part of our show, Mubi. And I really am. Thank you. I think what you believe is crap, but I... No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. I don't even know what, you know, what is out there. Dude, if you get on his show, I want you to hear, or to, you got to tell me. You got to tell me when you're on his show, okay?
Yeah, absolutely, man. And look, right back at you, brother. This is why I always highlight Judaism, Christianity, and Islam, the three Abrahamic juggernauts around which the entire cosmos revolves.
Yeah.
Right? Human events, human history, the beginning of it and the end of it, right? So help us God. So,
right on, dude.
At least as a believer, look, Muslims and Christians in particular, the I would say the threat of atheism is one of our greatest challenges, and we really need to prepare arguments for ourselves to give back to them in peace and love and kindness, of course.
Yeah, and I'm sure God's not worried about the atheist. Hey, dude, thank you. Thank you, man. Yeah. Take care.
God bless.
Thanks. Bye-bye. All right, folks, that's the end of the show. Thanks for tuning in. We'll be back next week. And do me a favor, for your if you're new, if you're just new, stay out of the left lane. Like a bomb. I'm a lover.